I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. I'm here today with Dr. Marie Moe, a research scientist and engineer with a strong background in cryptography and information security, who is also a senior security consultant at Mnemonic, focusing on incident response and threat intelligence. Marie, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me on the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me. Very happy to be here.
So Marie, to get started, share with us a little about what led to your interest in cryptography and information security, ultimately leading to your career.
Wow. Yeah. So it started out, I guess, with me always being interested in STEM and starting university studying mathematics. And that led me into cryptography. And then I went from there into information security. So I have a master's degree in mathematics and I have a PhD in computer science with a focus on information security. So that's what got me into this field. So I first started the academic route, and then after being, I guess, almost 10 years at university, I decided it was time to do something different, and I got a job in a technology company working on communication systems for car-to-car communication. And it was before autonomous driving became a thing, is like more than 10 years ago. And it was super exciting. And I worked with the standardization of security protocols, some hands-on prototyping, testing out in the field, actually installing equipment in cars, driving, and testing the communication. Super fun. But then unfortunately, I got downsized from that company. And I guess the technology was so far out in the future back then that it didn't really give them enough income. So they cut down the staff from the research department. And I found a job in the Norwegian government working with the incident response. It was at the National CERT in Norway. So that's what brought me into working on, hands-on with following cyber threat actors and working with incident response, helping companies that had been hacked, super exciting stuff, and also lots of information sharing. And it was one day that I was on my way to work early in the morning. I just suddenly fell unconscious. And it turned out that I had a heart problem, an arrhythmia that needed to be corrected with a pacemaker. And that's what brought me into pacemaker hacking and cybersecurity of medical devices. So I guess that's the long story about that.
That was very fascinating and very, very cool and unique path. So thank you for sharing. And your pacemaker story, take us through 5 years ago when that happened and you had to have that pacemaker implanted into your body to save your life, and sort of what prompted you to start thinking about potential vulnerabilities in software.
So it's actually 9 years ago I got the pacemaker implant.
Okay.
And then it's 5 years ago I started the pacemaker hacking project. So this is something that I've lived with for a while.
Okay.
So I was working for the CERT, the Norwegian government CERT. And responding to cyber incidents, thinking about the cyber attacks, and then suddenly getting this pacemaker implant. And I mean, I'm totally dependent on the implant. It's generating 100% of my heartbeat. So without the pacemaker, I probably wouldn't be here today.
Okay.
And that, of course, got me thinking, what if someone could, hack into my pacemaker? Make my pacemaker malfunction. And I mean, that would be a threat to my life. And this is something I never thought about, obviously, before I got the pacemaker. And I started to do a lot of research. And so I started to, of course, first when I got the implant, I was just very happy, relieved that this technology exists. It's keeping me alive. It saved my life, right? And then I started thinking about, cybersecurity in the context of the pacemakers. And I found out that there was not a lot of research done in this field. There was only one research group that I could find had published a paper back then. This was back in 2011. And there was one research group at the University of Michigan, led by Dr. Kevin Fu. They had looked into the possibility of hacking a pacemaker. That was the only research I could find. And then I started finding information about my own device. I found the technical manual of my pacemaker, which I read with great interest. And that's when I discovered that my device is actually connected. It's possible to connect my pacemaker indirectly to the internet.
Okay.
So you need to have a box, which is called the home monitor, which is then connected to the pacemaker wirelessly. And it can retrieve information, log data from the pacemaker, and send it over the mobile phone network, like 3G, 4G, 5, I guess in the future 5G network. And then there's a backend server at the vendor. And there's a web interface where the clinician can log in and, you know, read the pacemaker status data. And this was something that really boggled my mind. I mean, I never thought about that, something as intimate as an implanted cardiac device, like a pacemaker, could be connected to the internet. I mean, my body is, in a way, could be connected to the internet. And as a security researcher, I mean, this made me a bit worried when I was thinking about the technology inside of my body and the technology used to connect my pacemaker. Right. So I was really curious to see if I could figure out anything about the security implemented in this system. And there was no information available. And there was no other researchers back then that had looked into the possibility of, you know, using this this connectivity of the pacemaker as an attack vector. So the research that had been done that I found was looking at the communication between the pacemaker and a device called the programmer, which is used to configure the settings of the device. And this is a device that looks a little bit like a very bulky laptop, like an industrial-grade laptop. And you typically find this in the hospital or in the clinic. And of course, it's good that this is connected wirelessly, because you don't want to have a surgery, like open up the chest, right, in order to correct the settings and make the device function optimal for the patient. And so this is, of course, a wireless communication interface. But yeah, my device had two wireless communication interfaces, and the one that was connecting it to the internet was, I mean, I could not find any information about the security that satisfied me as a researcher. And I mean, this was something that was in the back of my mind for several years. I was a bit worried about this, but I was very busy in my daily job. But then I changed jobs. I started working as a security researcher. I led the team of researchers at the institute called SINTEF in Norway. And that's when I decided that it's time to start this research project, because, I mean, I didn't want to be the one complaining about not enough security research being done in this field and then being a security researcher myself. And that was what motivated me, I guess, to start this project 5 years ago and actually try to look into the possibilities of hacking my own pacemaker through this home monitor.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And when you started, because there was a period of time between when you received your pacemaker and to when you started down the path of researching, which you shared, when you sort of started thinking about, you know, your medical device in terms of the potential for hacking or, you know, access, what have you, did you start asking questions of medical professionals or like the vendors or anything like that? Did you conduct some outreach to them to try to figure out what it was that they knew? And did they have anything to offer you?
So I did search for information at the vendor. Back then I didn't contact them directly, but I did look at all the information that was available.
Okay.
I didn't find any specification, any like standards for the security implementations. And it also turned out, you know, that it's all proprietary. You actually have to hack these devices to get the information. It's not available anywhere.
Okay.
Yeah. But since then, other researchers also started, you know, looking into this, and there has been research published for other brands of devices which showed that they were vulnerable. Like you might remember the St. Jude Medical pacemakers vulnerabilities that were disclosed back in 2016. And also some vulnerabilities in Medtronic devices were disclosed. But my device is from the German vendor Biotronic. And as far as I know, my team is the only team that's done any security research on these devices and published it, at least any research that led to any published vulnerabilities.
Okay. And I watched your 2016 TEDx talk where you shared how naturally you didn't want to be experimenting with your own device and putting yourself at your own life at risk, but you did want to conduct that research. So you purchased some used, I think maybe the same product, correct me if I'm wrong, off of eBay, as well as had some donated. And so what was that research process like, and who did you engage with to help you work on this?
So in the start, this was more like a hobby project, I would say.
Okay.
I started in my working on it on my spare time, and some friends were helping out, volunteering their time for free, which I'm really grateful for. And then I got accepted to speak at a few conferences, which then led to some media interest. Which then led to my employer at the time picking this up and offering me some funding, some internal funding to actually work on this project in my day job too. But it was still a very small scale project.
Right.
Also, as an academic researcher, I was using quite a lot of time to write some research grant proposals, which is like a very lengthy process where you use a lot of time, resources to write a long application. Then you have to wait for a long time to get the answer. I mean, I was unsuccessful a couple of rounds with that. So it took me years to secure any external funding to be working on this.
Mm.
So that was a battle in itself. But I also have a 20% position at NTNU, which is the largest technical university in Norway. And that job is basically me teaching students about ethical hacking, forensics, and incident response.
Oh, okay, cool.
But also as part of that job, I also am a supervisor for master students on when they're writing their master thesis. And I got the bright idea of offering some assignments for students in pacemaker hacking. So that was really a great success, I would say. I was supervisor for 6 students so far that worked on my project. And they were some really, really brilliant students. Really grateful for their contributions to my project, because that really drove the research, and they got some really great results. And then there was the struggle with actually getting these research results published, because, you know, we wanted to do it when we found vulnerabilities, we wanted to do a coordinated vulnerability disclosure process. And we wanted to communicate our findings to the vendor and hopefully get them fixed before we published our findings. So that was a process in itself. So I've been through that now, I guess 3 times, or 2 times completed. The third one is still partly pending. So I learned a lot through that process, and I was really happy this year when we finally, you know, after so many years working on this, we finally were able to get some of the findings published, and also in the form of getting CVs published on some of the vulnerabilities we found. So that was a great victory and success, I would say, after 5 years working on this.
Yeah, absolutely. And congratulations on that. I did see that this year, this summer of this year, you released a set of findings that you and your research group found. And this manifested, if I'm understanding correctly, as 5 vulnerabilities. Do you want to take us through those and anything else that you found with your team?
I mean, I could maybe start from or rewind a little bit.
Sure.
and start with the first project that we worked on, which was based on it's actually a quite dramatic story, I would say.
Okay.
So this was back in 2016. I was invited to give a keynote talk at a conference it's called Hardware I.O. It was arranged in the Netherlands. And while I was on my way there, flying from Oslo to Schiphol in the Netherlands, my pacemaker went into failure mode. So what actually happened was that my pacemaker was hit by cosmic radiation while I was up in the air, which led to bit flips in the memory of the device. So, you know, zeros turned to ones turned to zeros.
Oh, wow.
And my device went into something called safety backup mode, which switches the pacing to a different kind of pacing, and sort of keeps it's like a hard-coded program that keeps the heart going at a steady pace of 70 beats per minute constantly until you get it corrected and fixed. And usually I don't feel my heart being paced at all with the pacemaker. Like I can't really feel it interacting with my heart.
Yeah.
But back then in the plane, I suddenly could feel it. It was a very strange feeling.
Yeah.
And also I looked down at my chest and I could see my chest muscle twitching involuntarily in the rhythm of my heart. Wow. So it was quite scary. And I notified the cabin crew. I have a pacemaker. I think something is wrong with my pacemaker. I mean, I had no idea what was going on. And they took this really seriously. They said if we hadn't been that close to Schiphol Airport, they might have redirected the flight and done an emergency landing. But luckily, we didn't have to do that. We were only 20 minutes from the airport. We landed. There was an ambulance waiting for me that took me directly to a hospital. I had to spend a night in the hospital under cardiac monitoring. And then the next morning, the pacemaker technician came in and did a checkup of my pacemaker. And he saw an error message that he's never seen before.
Oh, wow.
Which said data error in pacemaker. And it also said that the pacemaker was running this backup program and that I need a firmware reset of the pacemaker. So I got the firmware reset. And also there was a memory dump and a crash file, a log file created on the pacemaker programmer in the form of a zip file. So my pacemaker was reset. It was back to factory settings. and there's like almost 100 different configuration things you have to set in the pacemaker. But luckily, I always ask for a paper copy, like a hard copy of all my pacemaker settings when I'm in for my yearly checkups. So I had these in the office and I got a colleague to scan them and send them to me on an email, and they got all my settings corrected and I was good to go. And I gave the keynote speech the next day.
Wow.
So that was a success. And also, I mean, this helped me with my research because I had a memory stick in my bag and I asked the pacemaker technician to please give me a copy of that crash file containing the memory dump from my pacemaker. And this file was also sent to the vendor for investigation. And that was when I contacted the vendor the first time because I wanted to get the copy of their report, their findings from investigating the issue with the pacemaker. And that's, and they were so kind to give me their report. They did their investigation. And that's when I learned about, you know, the cosmic radiation that might have caused this bit flips. And this is a very rare event. It's something that is not very often happening to pacemakers, but it's something that is already described in literature and it can happen. So, well, I guess I was unlucky or lucky to have it happening to me. But the really interesting part was this crash file. It turned out it was an encrypted zip file with my data on. And I mean, I already started my pacemaker hacking project back then.
Right.
And we had been working, you know, to find the data from my heart and get access to the data from my heart. And here I had this file. And it turned out it was encrypted. So I handed this file over to the students that were working on the pacemaker project back then, Aiden and Anders, and they and as part of their master's thesis assignment, they investigated and actually reverse engineered the code for creating that encrypted zip file, and they found that the pacemaker programmer was encrypting patient data using AES, which is, you know, standard industry standard. It's a good encryption algorithm. But the problem was they used a hard-coded password, which was the same for every pacemaker programmer. So this means that so they were able to create a program that could decrypt any file created by any biophonic pacemaker programmer. And the password was biotronic in capital letters.
Oh, no.
So not very very secure. So we, back then, we considered this as a vulnerability. I mean, it wasn't a vulnerability that was an easy fix for, of course, because I can see why they might have implemented it this way. And also for backwards compatibility, it's hard to correct these things with the hard-coded passwords, which is a problem. You can see this in lots of embedded technology. So we wrote a vulnerability report. The students had their master's thesis embargoed for one full year while we worked on doing the coordinated vulnerability disclosure process. But it turned out that in the end, the vendor didn't recognize this as a vulnerability that poses a patient safety risk as defined by the FDA. And they basically said, we're not acknowledging your security report.
Oh.
So the consequence of that was that they published their thesis after 1 year with all the details. And also we presented the results at the Biohacking Village in DEFCON. So that was the first round I don't know if it's unsuccessful, but I mean, did not lead to any CVEs.
Yeah.
And then was the second round where we looked into the home monitoring units, and it was Guillaume Bour and Anniken Wiemli that did the research on that project, and that was the project that led to the published advisory this year. But that had also been embargoed for 1 year. So they actually finished their master's thesis 1.5 years ago. And then there's two students that also delivered their thesis this year, which has been published or is still not fully published, I think. And we're still working on looking into the vulnerabilities that they found. But Guillaume and Anniken, they did some amazing work. So in that project, they set up a fake base station in the lab and got the home monitoring units to communicate through this emulated setup. And also Guillaume did some amazing work on reverse engineering the communication protocol that was used. And that's where we, and also some hardware hacking. There was some JTAG Yeah, so he connected to the JTAG on the hardware inside of the home monitoring unit and was able to find the passwords in there and dump the memory, and also from that reconstruct the proprietary communication protocol. So we found there was improper authentication, there was clear text transmission of sensitive information, missing encryption of sensitive data, and also the storing of passwords in recoverable format. So if you want all the details, you can read that in the published advisory. And also Guillaume has published a series of blog posts, and I have also published a blog post on Mnemonic's blog about this, all the details of that research. But basically, these vulnerabilities would allow an attacker to launch a man-in-the-middle attack on the home monitoring unit, and which could be, I think, it could be a possible threat to patient safety. It's not you cannot really change the settings on the pacemaker through that communication interface. According to the vendor, you can only read settings from the pacemaker. You cannot change the settings through that interface, which is, I guess, is a relief, which makes it less critical for patient safety. But in a scenario where there are some, you know, problems with the pacemaker, you could potentially do a on-the-fly modification of the information and send, like, modify the information saying that there's no problem with the pacemaker, which could be an issue if, for instance, the battery is starting to run out or something like that. So that's the story of our research findings so far.
Very fascinating. And so for the I might be phrasing this wrong, but accessing a medical device, it isn't necessarily, it's my understanding, it's not necessarily like we would see portrayed in the media where someone on one continent is hacking into the, you know, the pacemaker of someone in another continent. Do you have to be in relatively close proximity to have access, or how does that work exactly?
So in this, in the scenario that we described in this latest research, you have to have had physical access to the equipment at one time to dump the keys from it. I guess that requires physical proximity. But you could perform the attack as a network-based attack. So I guess it's not like hacking in the movies where you get a shell on the pacemaker on the other side of the world. That's not how it works. So which is good. I'm not worried about getting my pacemaker hacked. I mean, I'm more worried about it malfunctioning for other reasons. I mean, if you're a high-profile target, then you should, you know, have this as part of your personal threat assessment and threat model.
Right. Yeah. I remember when Dick Cheney, former vice president of the United States, when he received his pacemaker, it was something that he had people looking into.
Yeah. And also, I mean, this type of research, I mean, I looked into just pacemakers and pacemaker communication. But I mean, all devices that are somehow connected to someone's body that interact with the internet, I think you should really think twice and about the if this really needs to be connected, and also like really invest in security mechanisms on that connection. So it's not only pacemakers that are getting connected. I mean, it's other types of devices too, like insulin pumps, I mean, hearing aids, maybe not as critical since they're not implanted in your body. But I mean, I think that in future, we will have more and more of these devices and implants, and it's going to be an issue, you know, to keep them all patched, have the latest software updates installed, and thinking about your personal wireless security.
Right. And how does patching work for them? Like currently, do you have to go somewhere and have someone do that for you, or is it, are there?
So I'm happy that I don't want to get any over-the-air updates to my pacemaker through insecure wireless Wi-Fi. the way that my pacemaker would get a security update, and also is actually going into the clinic and getting hooked up to this programmer. That's the way you get the software updates. And I mean, there's a risk assessment to be done there, because, you know, a software update might also pose a risk to an implant malfunctioning. And if you're 100% pacemaker dependent, as I am, you really want to make sure that there is someone available nearby in case something goes wrong with that update and the pacemaker starts acting funny. And so you want to be in a clinical setting when you get that. But those home monitoring units, they can get patches through the internet.
Okay. And so you mentioned, you know, updating software, potentially being a situation where you're not in close proximity to someone who can help reset or what have you. But what are the other, you know, or just more generally the risks to the general public that have medical IoT devices?
Yeah, so there's risk of collateral damage when you see things like ransomware, worms, you know, like the WannaCry. Right. That infected the hospital equipment, even though it probably wasn't targeted against the medical equipment, just that the worm got an inside of hospital networks, and then you have equipment there running, outdated operating systems. Like, for instance, this pacemaker programmer, when we looked into that, we saw that it was running Windows XP embedded, which is really old and supported anymore. And there's plenty of these. It also can be very expensive equipment, you know, like MRI scanners or other types of really costly equipment at hospitals that are running on really old software.
Right.
And if these are not properly segmented from the rest of the network, some of them might even be searchable on the internet.
Wow.
As some researchers has shown, with default username password settings that you can find if you download the manual for the equipment.
Oh, wow.
that's a real risk to patient security if someone hacks into those kinds of devices and you know, make them deliver the wrong dosage of the medication or the wrong dosage of radiation. That could be a threat. And also, I mean when you have denial of service, like the equipment going down because of ransomware and patients being redirected to other hospitals. We had one incident of this, unfortunately, this year, in Germany, where a patient died because a hospital was ransomwared. A patient was redirected in a critical condition and didn't make it there in time.
Right.
So that's, I think that's what we really should be worried about. Not so much the, you know, targeted, highly sophisticated hacks that you have to like tailor for the specific device.
Okay. That makes sense. And have you seen any improvements in the medical device field over the past 5 years during your research?
Oh yeah, there's been a lot of when I started out, I mean, as I said, there was almost no research done. There was no focus on the area.
Right.
Also, the regulators didn't really have this on their agenda. Mm. There was no requirements on the vendors for adding cybersecurity to their products and making sure that their products couldn't be hacked. And now there's guidelines from the FDA on cybersecurity. There's a lot of things that happened. There's new medical device directive in the EU that is actually mentioning cybersecurity, which they did not mention before.
Wow.
So in the regulatory side, things have moved on. And also, I think the vendors have now started to, become aware that this is something they need to invest in. It's something that the customers are starting to ask questions about, they should really take this seriously. And I've seen some change in that area. And so I don't know if you heard about I Am the Cavalry, the grassroots organization. I Am the Cavalry has been working hard over the past 5 years on this, on medical device security, talking to all the stakeholders, taking a multi-stakeholder approach, focusing on empathy. I mean, really putting the right people together in a room. And by being part of the I'm the Cavalry organization, I've been invited to the US to talk to regulators. I've been at the FDA conferences, roundtable discussions, and so on. And so many things that are happening in this space right now, and we have had some wins in this area, but it's still a lot of work to do. So I mean, we're not there yet. And also, I mean, this technology has a long lifetime. I mean, I had my pacemaker for 9 years now. The battery is starting to run out. I will need a new one in 1 or 2 years time.
Okay.
But think about, I have a pacemaker 10 years inside of my body. It was already a connected technology when I had it implanted. And the time for getting a medical device approved for sale on the market could take several years. So the technology that connected my device to the internet was probably developed 15 years ago. And also when they opened up these home monitoring units that we got on very cheaply on eBay, we could see old-fashioned modems that were, not state-of-the-art technology.
Right.
So that's a problem in this area, the longevity and the time it takes to replace the equipment. So I think we will be, struggling with this in the coming years, and maybe 10, 20 years until we really see a big change.
And so for your battery, do you have to, I'm assuming you have to get surgery for that to be replaced?
Yeah. Okay. So they do not just replace the battery, they replace the whole pacemaker.
Oh, okay.
That's a surgery, but it's not a really major surgery. It's a minor surgery. So okay.
Will you get the same?
I'm not too worried.
Well, yeah, that's good. And will you get the same kind, or would you get a newer one?
Oh, that's a good question. So when I started out, when I got the pacemaker the first time, it was an emergency procedure, and I had no concept about pacemakers. I didn't really have any say in that discussion with my cardiologist about which pacemaker, which device to get. But now, I really have the knowledge, and I would say I'm a pretty difficult patient right now.
You're shopping around.
but I'm noticing that, I don't think that's possible to get the pacemaker that is not connected anymore.
Right.
They all have added connectivity to them now.
Okay.
10 years ago, the connectivity feature was like a new type of feature. Mm. But now all of them are connected, and they're starting to add also Bluetooth connections to the devices, and you can have an app on your phone that connects to it. So, there's lots of things to consider.
Yeah.
But the most important thing is the medical that is actually correcting my medical issues.
Yeah, of course.
So that's what will be the first priority. And then I will also ask questions about cybersecurity and have extra look into that.
Well, I'm glad that at least you can kind of weigh in on it this round and you know kind of, you know, the questions to ask. So that's good to hear.
Yeah. So one thing that I'm concerned about is, of course, scaring other patients from getting pacemaker implants.
That's a good point.
Might, you know, might save their life because they're scared of hacking. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to, you know, scare or create uncertainty and doubt around this. The objectives of our research is to, you know, force the vendors into making these devices more cyber secure for the future.
Yeah.
And have a balanced, you know, discussion about the you always have to do like a cost benefit analysis when it comes to these things. So the medical aspect and how it's actually correcting your medical issues should be at the forefront of that discussion.
Absolutely. But I'm glad you raised that. I think that's very important for listeners to keep in mind and as a takeaway of this, for sure.
Yeah. And also another thing is that, it's important that providers knows how to discuss this with patients. And it's not always that the patient wants all the information. I mean, there's different types of patients, like patients like myself that want to know all the details, and there's other patients that might not want to know all the details. They just trust the device and they want to move on with their life and not think too much about it. And I respect that. So you shouldn't force anyone into having to read lots and lots of information about cybersecurity. But the information should be available for those who want to have that information. That's my perspective.
Right. And as you shared before, if just remind our listeners where they can access your findings should they want to read more.
Yeah, so you can look at the blog of Mnemonic. I wrote a blog post called Uncovering Vulnerabilities in Pacemakers, Results from 5 Years of the Pacemaker Hacking Project. And in that blog post, there's lots of links to further details about our research.
Fantastic. Well, Marie, thank you so much for joining us. This has been incredibly fascinating and really appreciate your perspectives on what you shared today.
Thanks for having me on your podcast.
Of course. I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Joining me today was Dr. Marie Moe, a research scientist and engineer with a strong background in cryptography and information security, who is also a senior security consultant at Mnemonic, focusing on incident response and threat intelligence. For more on cybersecurity, you can listen to all of our podcast episodes at cybercrime.radio.